Strong, Michael. I'm impressed. I really am.
I'm glad you're impressed.
Right. I'm Rob Crocker. I'm here with Michael Brecker. We're talking about your brand new album on MCA. Got a wonderful group of guys with you.
I feel the same way.
Well, Kenny Kirkland, you know what I find most fascinating about this is that Kenny Kirkland, Pat Metheny, and Charlie Hayden are all guys in different directions in the music. It's interesting that you were able to bring them all together, and they sound like such a fantastic unit together.
Well, I think that that's almost built into the talent that they have, that they're so flexible, all of them. And I was curious to hear the way they'd sound together, and it really worked out great.
Yeah.
I had been familiar, I had done quite a bit of playing with Jack DeJohnette and Charlie and Pat, beginning on Pat's record for ECM, called 8081. And I had always kind of held on to that memory. We did some touring, and I wanted to kind of revive the rhythm section and add Kenny Kirkland. So that was the idea behind that.
Jack DeJohnette seems to be a very innovative person. I mean, this seems, with Jack DeJohnette, he never for a second stops moving, thinking, pulsating.
He's an extremely strong force. Mm-hmm. He, basically, I think you could say he transcends the drums. He swings harder than anybody I've ever played with. In the immediate future, I'm planning on going on the road throughout the States and Europe and Japan in a band consisting of Mike Stern and Jeff Andrews, Kenny Kirkland also, and Adam Nussbaum.
Well, who's Jeff I'm not familiar with?
Jeff Andrews is an incredible bassist, an up-and-comer. He's just kind of branching out on the scene now, and I'm real fortunate to have snared him.
One of the things I remember most, and I tell you this, Mike, I remember this very warmly about you. Your first gig in New York with Billy Cobham in Dreams. And it was down on St. Mark's Place in the Lower East Side. And you have managed from then, you came out and you were very humble, you're very serious about the music. You were obviously in love with your tenor saxophone and had been for a long time. And you've gotten funnier and looser, but you still have that same quality of loving your horn and loving the music. Your brother Randy, I just wonder, because Randy has never talked about growing up in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, what was it for you guys in Philadelphia that, as I say, in Philadelphia...
You might have answered it already.
Right. The mecca of the music. Well, was there something in particular in the household, in your family?
Well, there was something particular that got us started that was... kind of a musical force in my family was my father, who was a pianist, a jazz pianist, and he's an attorney also. And if you can picture that.
I'm trying desperately.
ever since I can remember, from my earliest memories, there was always jazz in the house.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I thought that everybody on the planet played an instrument.
Yeah, till you get outside.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You're growing up in a really a jazz household, believing in jazz, feeling a part of it, and your first New York gig, if I'm not mistaken, is Dreams, which is not really totally in line with that. In a way it is, but it's not totally. Dreams was one of the early fusion bands, more leaning toward rock, more than a lot of other bands.
Yeah.
So how was that for you?
I think the way that developed was... through various, I guess, exposures to different kinds of music, aside from the fact that growing up in Philadelphia, there was always R&B, and there was always rock and roll, coming, all the way back to American Bandstand. And also, I think after I moved out of Philadelphia, both my brother and I got very interested in R&B. And of course, the Beatles came along at that time, and music kind of just blew wide open.
Yeah.
In other areas, and Dreams was the first attempt at a kind of a melding of different musical thoughts. We, in that band, sought out other musicians that had similar backgrounds. My brother had been playing with Billy Cobham with
right.
Horace Silver.
Horace Silver, that's how we met, yeah.
That's how that hookup mm-hmm. happened. And Billy had also had a strong R&B influence in his playing. And the thing that I think separated at that time Dreams from other bands such as Blood, Sweat, and Tears and Chicago in their beginning was that we leaned heavily on improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go on stage and just, we had basic heads and then we'd just stretch out and play, except it was over R&B rhythms.
Yeah.
Particularly when Chuck Rainey was in the band and Will Lee later on. And it was an interesting time to be alive playing.
Yes, it was.
And I remember you all the way back. You know, it's...
There's something that you and Randy have experienced that not many people have, and that is having played in clubs around the world,
mm-hmm.
you guys open your own club in New York, which is a dream, I'm sure, of 99.5% of all musicians to be their own club owners. How was that experience like? Or is it a bore to talk about?
Well, I'm here to tell the 99% not to do it. Strike that dream.
Right. It's like ivory sofa.
It was an experience that I'll never forget. We were in operation. The club was called 7th Avenue South, and we mm-hmm. were in operation for 8 years. And there were a lot of great moments. And I really actually don't regret having done it, although it was very difficult to bring it off the ground, and it finally closed. And it was the starting place of a lot of groups and even a lot of relationships, mm-hmm. marriages, my own marriage, as a matter
right,
of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I miss it also. I think its departure has left kind of a little bit of a vacuum for certain kinds of music in New York,
in New York,
hasn't quite been filled. And hopefully someplace not owned by me will emerge.
I remember, I think up until now, the best recording that I've ever heard of the true, what I think is the true Michael Brecker, the sensitivity of Michael Brecker, was the album you did with Klaus Ogerman.
Mm.
You know, I just thought... I couldn't wait for the first rainy night that I was home to put this on and think and feel by. I'm finding in this new record of yours some other choice pieces. In fact, Choices.
Choices was written by Mike Stern. Nothing Personal. And The Cost of Living was written by Don Gromick.
So you and Don have a really strong relationship.
Yeah, we do.
Don seems to be quite a composer, but you seem to be a great interpreter of his work, and I guess that has to do with your relationship over the years. But is that necessarily true?
Yes.
Okay. Great answer for that.
It seems to be true. I love Don's writing,
yeah.
and he seems to like the way I interpret his writing,
mm-hmm.
and the two of us, even personality-wise, complement each other. Very well.
You don't record a lot on your own.
No, I hopefully will be doing quite a bit more. This record for me was a big breakthrough, just to be able to do it and to have the opportunity to do it. I had been previously pretty scared to do it. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a much clearer idea now of what musical directions I'd like to pursue. And mm-hmm. it's really started by just going through the process of doing this record and doing it in an honest way without any real considerations other than the music.
Well, what were some of the other choices you had in mind in terms of musical directions?
A rap record? No, just kidding. the other choice could have been something quite a bit more electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I had done enough of that recently and that this would be a nice way for me to start.
Yeah.
Doing basically an acoustic record with musicians that I absolutely love to play with and whom I respect greatly. And then kind of taking it from there. And it's opened up a whole panorama of of things for me, both personally and in ways I'm listening to music right now. I find myself listening to a lot more jazz than I have in quite a bit over the past few years and liking it more.
Now, there's one other guy in your band I want to talk about. I find very fascinating. It's the other wind player in the band.
Is that...
you and your new instrument.
Yes.
What is this thing, an iwi?
Yeah, this thing is called an iwi, which is EWI, which stands for electronic wind instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Although it has other names. Some people call it a Steinerphone. My wife calls it the weirdophone.
But what is it? What's it look like?
It's a wind sensing synthesizer, which is based on a saxophone fingering.
Mm-hmm.
It has 8 octaves and is controlled by air, which gives it a very expressive nature.
What do you blow into
it? You blow kind of into it, across it.
Across it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you feel good about this new album?
I feel very good about this new album, yeah.
Yes.
And that's hard for me to say, because I'm usually...
not satisfied.
I'm usually not satisfied, I do like this album very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that over the years. You're one of the guys that when one comes up to say, Michael, it was great, what you just played on stage was marvelous.
I go,
your look is
man.
Like, yeah, your look is like, you have got to be kidding. So, I'm glad. It is said that you, in talking about this album, said that you're trying to make a record that has a lot of depth and mystery. You know, a record that makes people want to come back and listen more than just once. I think as we listen to the Steinerphone behind us, I think you've achieved that.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Michael Brechter, thank you.